Welcome to my Soul Series. Soul Series is part of Oprah and Friends, exclusively on XM Radio Channel 156. And you can listen to the entire Soul Series collection on xmradio.com/Oprah. Author Maria Coffey says that it's often the hardest, most challenging experiences of our lives that crack us open. And in her book, Explorers of the Infinite, Maria chronicles the secret spiritual lives of adventurers, extreme athletes who push themselves to the limits and experience this intense sense of being alive. So the question I have to ask for her today, there are many of them, are they reaching new spiritual heights, just toying with death, or both? And what can we, who are never going to be extreme adventurers, learn from them? Join us as we try to uncover the mysteries and the call of the wild. It's uplifting, enlightening, truly powerful. Welcome to Soul Series. Hi, I'm Oprah. Welcome to my Soul Series. Last April, David Blaine, famous for performing death-defying stunts with the world watching, came on my television show to attempt to break the Guinness World Record for holding his breath underwater. Risking his life, he broke that record with all of us watching, holding his breath for 17 minutes and 4 seconds. I couldn't believe my eyes, and I was a nervous wreck. Considering this, along with the other dangerous stunts he'd performed over his lifetime, I thought that his risky behavior begged a pretty obvious question. I wondered before sitting with you, do you have some kind of death wish?
No.
No.
No, 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 no.
No?
The opposite.
You have a life wish.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. So when you do this, it's not because you must know, though, that you're putting your body at risk. So any number of things can go wrong.
There is a lot of risk, but I meet experts in the field and I learn, and it's not like the risk seems like it could be. This guy doesn't care about life.
Yeah.
But it's the opposite. I like to find out what we are capable of pushing ourselves to do,
okay,
and then studying it with the people that have done it.
Okay, I get that.
Yeah.
Are you nervous today as you approached?
I'm more excited.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll be nervous, though. I'll be more nervous. I guarantee. Wherever you are in the tank, in your mind, no, outside the tank, I am far more nervous than you are. And that was indeed true. And while David may have an uncommon appetite for danger, believe it or not, there are many people like him who are willing to do just what he does regularly, to risk death in order to experience life on a whole new level. They have a life wish. Author, journalist, and adventure guide Maria Coffey has uncovered this life or death world in a book that appeared in our reading room in O Magazine this past July. It's called Explorers of the Infinite, the Secret Spiritual Lives of Extreme Athletes and What They Reveal About Near-Death Experience, Psychic Communication, and Touching the Beyond. So delighted to have you here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yes. What did you think of David's response? It's not a death wish. It's a life wish.
Absolutely. He's absolutely right. Every single extreme adventurer I've met has said that. And not only that, they haven't just said that. I've sensed it from them. They are
really?
All full of life. These are not people who want to die. They want to live, and they want to live really, really fully. So I totally agree with what
you
said.
Is it about pushing life to the edge, living on the absolute extreme, edge of life?
In some cases it is, but you have to remember that these are very skilled people.
Mm-hmm.
When they go out to climb high mountains or to dive deep into the ocean or to surf huge waves, they have a set of very, very finely tuned skills. And they are not going out there expecting to die, because they really feel in control most of the time. They need to feel in control to be out in such extreme elements. And I think for them it's more a case of living totally in the moment, because They go into what's been called a state of flow, when a very challenging situation meets a set of very finely mm-hmm. tuned skills.
It's what other people, is it the flow and the zone the same
thing? Exactly, and peak yeah. experience, they've, mm-hmm. they've all been called different things, or living in the now. And, mm-hmm. and I think for many of them, it's that is a very big part of what draws them to do this. But I do think there's another part, and I've really been exploring it in my book, that it's about a total immersion in nature, which is really important for them, which maybe sets them apart a little bit different from a little bit differently from David.
From run-of-the-mill athletes? And by run-of-the-mill, I mean just people who do, you know, break records and have extraordinary experiences yeah. as athletes.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you think about our ancient ancestors, the hunter-gatherer mm-hmm. societies, they lived in a world that was highly unpredictable and dangerous, and they sought to live in harmony with that world by worshipping it, by worshipping all the elements mm-hmm. of that world, and living harmoniously with all the elements and the animals as much as they could. And there was this...
So they celebrated and honored and had reverence for nature.
And they tried to have this harmonious interaction with nature. And through a total immersion in nature, which mm-hmm. was forced upon them. But then, of course, things changed. There was the Neolithic Revolution, and farming came. There was the rise of institutionalized spirituality. And, you know, life changed and changed and changed. And now we've got to the point where it's difficult to really be totally immersed in nature. And I think my hunch is that these extreme adventurers, the big part of the spirituality of their activities is that they are stripping themselves away. They're going out into nature. They're taking away the insulation that surrounds us all. They're taking away the safety nets. They're opening themselves up. And in order to survive, they've got to really hone their intuitions. They've got to be able to feel when there's a slight shift in the wind, or the snow feels a little bit differently under their feet, or there's a brewing storm. Just like our ancient ancestors must have been able to do. And in some parts of the mm-hmm, world, people mm-hmm. still are living like that. So they basically go back into this state, which is inherent in all of us, I think, mm-hmm. which comes from when the life was all about survival. And I think to survive, they're living in the moment as well. Because
do you think that natural connection that you're talking about, that they have to be in the moment, following their instincts to a level where, you know, not following your instincts would mean death? It's a difference between life and death. Do you think that connection is dormant in most of us, or lost on most of us?
I think it's dormant. I think
not lost, just dormant.
Just dormant, yes. And I think, I mean, all of us have experienced going into an extreme state of focus, of living totally in the now under situations of great duress.
Yes, and often people who are in emergency situations do that.
Yes.
That's why
mm-hmm.
they, you know, time stops or things become mm-hmm. surreal, because they're just focused on what needs to be done mm-hmm. now. You're not thinking about last week, mm-hmm. what you got to do in the future.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's what all the great spiritual teachers say. All the chatter stops and the mind stills at that moment.
That's right. And that's what these kinds of athletes are able to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't climb Everest and get to the summit
right.
without it.
You have to. That's what they say, you know, the first few days of a big expedition like that, there's still the chatter going on in their minds about what's happening at home and things they have to do, and gradually life gets simpler and simpler and simpler, and it has to, the higher up they get up the mountain or the rock face, until everything else falls away and they're totally focused on this one activity. And the interesting thing to me is how satisfying that is, and mm-hmm. it's satisfying for all of us. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I've learnt from them, I guess. I think back to some of the extreme situations in my own life when I heard about the death of a lover, when I held my father's hand when he was dying.
Death of the lover who was the climber.
Yeah, yes. I nearly lost my own life once in a drowning accident. And I mean, the strange thing is that those were devastating things, but I was truly alive at those times, and they broke me open in a way that sometimes only extreme situations can do, and mm-hmm. I look back at extreme moments like that, and it's you know, that they're almost like gifts, because they teach you something about how to live when you're close to the edge of death. Or
I recall of the many athletes that you did, extreme mountain climbers you interviewed, you said they shared an overwhelming sense of aliveness in the mountains and at moments of great danger. Mm-hmm. You interpreted this as sort of, I think you called it entering a transcendence zone.
Mm-hmm.
That's that flow thing you're
yes.
talking about,
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you think danger is a necessary ingredient to get there?
I think for some of these people it is. Mm-hmm. I think some people they've talked, a couple of them have described it as a spiritual addiction.
Mm-hmm.
One climber talked about reaching moments of extended reality in the mountains.
Really? Describe that for us.
Well, in his case, these were paranormal phenomena that he experienced when he was in telepathic communication with other people, or he experienced ghosts on the mountain, or he was guided down a mountain in a storm by the spirits of the mountain. And he said he longed for those moments, and he said they weren't hallucinations, because he's had hallucinations at altitude and he knows the difference.
Mm-hmm.
But he said he longed for those moments, and the only way that he could reach those moments what he actually said was, he's a Mexican mountaineer, Carlos Carsolio, he said, I only reach these moments when I'm very close to the edge of death, and then poof, the channel is open. That's exactly what he said. So it seems that...
Could that be that experience written off as dopamine or naturally released?
Well, he said no, because he separates these from other experiences that he knows are...
You know, dopamine and endorphins that are,
yeah.
some people say, are released from fear.
In high stress, yeah. Well, he says there's a difference between those situations that he's recognized as being due to lack of oxygen and these other mm-hmm. Experiences that he says are when he really feels he's entered another realm of consciousness. Now, for some of the other climbers, they're not as... they don't talk about it in such extreme terms. They talk about, you know, reaching transcendent moments when they are, yeah, when they are really pushed to the limits.
Have you climbed?
Yeah, yeah. I climbed one time in the Alps, and it was terrifying.
Okay, I thought I read that.
Yeah, yeah, but I didn't climb.
So that climbing doesn't do it for you?
No, I didn't. I climbed in the Alps, ice climbing, and then I trekked up to 21,000 feet on Everest.
Do you find these 21,000?
It was tough.
Listen.
Yeah.
I lived in Telluride, was where we were but my house was at 10,000 feet. It was hard breathing there. So mm-hmm. when I'd walk up the mountain to, you know, like 1,000 feet, it was hard for me to even, you know, breathe. So anyway, when you were interviewing all of these various profound athletes who had these great experiences, did you sense that this was like a religion for them, that this was their... sense of spirituality or connection to spirituality?
I did, very mm-hmm. much so.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them were people who'd been raised in some religious mm-hmm. Institution, Catholic or Anglican, and had left that.
Mm-hmm.
And many of them described it as their homegrown spirituality. And time and time again, they would talk about that.
Did they call it spiritual? Did they use that language to describe it?
Some of them did, some of them didn't. Some of them would say, yes, like, I find God in the mountains when things are really tough. That's mm-hmm. where my God is. Surfers would always talk about Mother Ocean and talk about, you know, the ocean is their church.
Mm-hmm.
So in one way or another, most of them would always bring a spiritual aspect into their sport.
Do they fear death?
I think everybody fears death. I think everyone has a profound fear of death.
I'm intrigued by the mountain climbers, though, as I read about, you know, the stories of the climbers in particular, because every time you go out, you are really, it feels, even though I know they say it not, it's mm-hmm. not, it always feels like you're chasing death. And I'm astounded. What surprised me most, I just never thought of it this way before, which is always wonderful, reading a book when you discover something. I never thought of them as having families, like real families, with children. Mm-hmm. And if I was the wife of a climber who go, you know, and I've got mm-hmm. babies at home and the children, every time he leaves and goes away, you don't know whether he's coming back. And you talked mm-hmm. about how even some of the wives are, you know, some don't want to know what's going on because, you know, you never know when you're going to get the word that he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And putting your family through that.
Yeah, I examined that in my last book, Where the Mountain Casts Its Shadow. It's a whole other subject.
And, yes.
And I mean, I went through that myself.
Yes,
because I was together with a mountaineer who was away in the high Himalayas climbing the world's highest mountains without oxygen for half of our relationship. And it was very, very difficult. And I guess part of the reason I went on to write Explorers of the Infinite is because I was always really wanting to understand what the lure was. You know, what was it really that pulled him back and pulled these other climbers back, despite the fact they love their spouses, they love their children, they don't want to hurt their parents, but they are drawn back time and time again.
I'm joined by author and adventure guide Maria Coffey. And what's interesting is, do you think that they are different from us? Those explorers, are they different than, you know, as I was reading the book, I'm thinking, well, I just don't have an adventurous spirit. I just, you know, I like sitting on my porch reading about other people mm-hmm. who are doing it. Yes.
I suppose in a way they are, and I guess that's why I've always been fascinated by mm-hmm. them, because they take their life. I've always been fascinated by the fact, and this was what drew me originally to my boyfriend who died on Everest, that he went to this place that I could never go and that I didn't want to go to. He went to the very edge of life, and then he came back and told me what he'd found there. And clearly as well, he also went to amazing places physically too. But I think, and people have always done that throughout.
Explain what you mean. He went to the edge of life and then came back and told you what he found there.
Well, people, I mean, there have always been great adventurers throughout history. People
yes.
who are prepared really to push the envelope. I mean,
the
early explorers who set off in little sailing boats, not knowing if they were going to sail off the edge of the world or
That's
not.
That's right.
They just
when they still thought the world was flat.
It was flat, exactly.
Yes.
The people who went to explore the poles for the first time. I mean, there have always been these people who, and it's in adventure and in science, other areas of life, mm-hmm. but in physical adventure, always people who are just prepared to really go there and risk everything. And then they go and they come back and they mm-hmm. tell us what is out there in the world. And so, for me, that was the fascination, that these people, I mean, a lot of the world has been explored, but now I see what I'm interested in is what they are exploring at another level, at a
yes.
spiritual level. You
yes.
know, they're pushing through
what
realms.
What are you really searching
yeah,
for?
Yeah, they're pushing the boundaries of what is physically possible humanly, but then when they push through that, what do they find then? What realms of consciousness are they opening up and showing
What did Joe
them?
Tell you?
Joe didn't tell me very much in that regard. He had been, he'd spent 7 years in a seminary training to be a Catholic, a Jesuit priest. And he came out of that at 19 and wanted nothing else to do with religion. And he would never say to me, I mean, you know, we talked about it quite a lot. And he would say, you know, there's nothing spiritual about this at all. And when I die, it's going to be oblivion and that's that. But I never believed him. I always felt that he'd somehow been hardwired through mm-hmm. those years in the seminary. And I felt, like many of these extreme athletes, in order to feel whole, he needed to push himself. He needed to suffer. He needed to go into the states of...
Because it is suffering.
Oh, for all of these athletes, they all suffer. They all open up to suffering. And what I find interesting about that is if you look at what they do, and then you look at what all the ancient mystics in every spiritual tradition have done, there's a lot of similarities.
Hmm.
I mean, Milarepa in Tibet in the 13th century used to wander the Himalayas just dressed in a sheet and eating nettles.
Eating nettles?
Nettles and green. They said his skin turned green sometimes. Manchurian shamans used to dive under frozen rivers, and there were only a few holes that they could come up, and if they missed
yes.
a hole, they would die. I mean, even at the beginning of the last century, the caribou, there was a Danish ethnographer in the Carib who was studying the caribou Inuit, who met a shaman there who, to be initiated as a shaman, spent a month sealed inside an igloo with no clothes, only a deer hide to lie on, animal hide
okay,
to lie on.
They're not like us.
And
they're
what he said to Rasmussen was, words to the effect of, all true wisdom is to be found far from the dwelling of men in the great solitudes, and it's only attained through suffering.
Wow.
So, you know, when you think about it, they have a lot in common, really, because all of these athletes, even in their training,
Well, I do know that for just the average one of us listening to you here now, that our greatest lessons come from our pain, you know, and that
absolutely
yes, our greatest mm-hmm. recognition of, you know, self comes through mm-hmm. pain mm-hmm. or suffering. Okay.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly.
So were you angry when you lost? I was alluding to this earlier about these wives and children who are left behind with mm-hmm. these infinite explorers, particularly the mountaineers, who every time you go on a climb, mm-hmm. you're cheating death to a great extent. Were you angry when you lost Joe?
I wasn't angry. Mm-hmm. I thought I wasn't angry. Some anger came out later when I found out that he'd been cheating on me. That's when the anger came out.
Yeah.
That's when the anger came out.
Dying on a mountain, no problem.
Yeah.
Cheating? Yeah, I'll kick your butt over that.
But it was years before I allowed that anger to come out. It was funny, but I don't think I felt, no, I wouldn't say.
That's the common denominator in the human experience.
I know.
That's it. That's so like everybody.
Yeah, but
But so Buddhist to the idea of Buddhism, the idea of diving into the suffering, actually mm-hmm. allowing yourself to feel that mm-hmm. and allowing that pain to make you feel more alive, mm-hmm. being connected to the pain, mm-hmm. feeling the pain and being mm-hmm. more alive.
And, you know, Lance Armstrong has said it, that he felt absolutely cleansed, you know, after doing the huge races that he did. And then some of the people that I interviewed told me in training what they would do. Like that some of the climbers would hold their hands in iced water for 45 minutes to get used to being high on the mountains and try and get themselves immune to frostbite. One climber told me that he ran stairs until he vomited, and he used to, because he did extremely hard rock climbs, this is Mark Twight, and he used to bang his hands against concrete until they bled. And then people, you know, free divers like Tanya Streeter describe her training as absolutely brutal. That, you know, you train until you're just absolutely to the point of exhaustion. And yet somehow, again, it, like you said, it seems that we, you know, we need to suffer to grow and to feel whole. And all of them reach. And you know, the ultramarathoners, you know, when they run for, you know, 45 hours nonstop, and yet at the end of it feel a profound sense of peace.
Do you believe that, you were talking about searching for something more, that one of the reasons that you wrote in Explorers is that to be able to determine what they're really searching for. Do you think that it's ultimately that sense of spiritual transcendence? Even when they don't describe it that way, that they're looking for that peak moment, that, you know, illusory thing.
I think we all long for transcendence, and I think transcendence comes in moments. It's never a steady state. But I think it's also, we all have a deep longing for connection with each other, with the earth, with the universe. And I think that's part of what they're doing too. Mm-hmm. They're immersing themselves in nature. They're finding this deep, deep connection with the world that, you know, has so much of that has been lost now in modern times.
So do you see this whole extreme adventure as a spiritual search or more as a spiritual tool? That they use it as a tool?
I think it can be both. Mm-hmm. It's been different adventurers have described it to me as both. That they're searching for it, but what they learn when they're in the mountains, some of them can use when they're not in the mountains or not in the deep ocean or not surfing a big wave.
Yeah.
To be more in the moment.
Talk about how they speak or have spoken to you about this sixth sense that comes alive, that becomes more cracked open, fulfilled in the moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have to imagine you've got a climber on a mountain, on a very steep face, on snow, which could, you know, give way at any time, suddenly getting this sense that this slope, there's something feels different underneath his boot, this big, big, thick boot, mm-hmm. and just knowing that it's time to move off the slope to a safer place, and then the whole slope goes. And when they've described things like this, it's as if they have got this sixth sense that somehow they're so tuned in to the natural world that they can pick things up that they wouldn't they normally wouldn't be able to do if they weren't so completely in the moment, so completely focused.
Well, I tell you, I was saying that I realize reading Explorers that I'm not really an adventurer, but you write in such beautiful detail that I felt like I was there for, with many of the explorers. Do you personally believe that the sixth sense is God?
I don't know what God is. I think that sixth sense is something that we all have, that our ancient ancestors had, and that again it lies dormant in us, in all of us. I think, and in that sense, maybe God is in, we are all God, and God is in all of us. But I don't think it's something that comes from outside of us. I think it's something that's within us. It's a power that we all have.
Do you sense that it's also connected to everything else?
Oh, I firmly believe.
Do they talk about that?
You know, the interesting thing when I was interviewing all of these athletes, I was a bit worried when I started talking to them because I didn't know how they'd react to my questions about spirituality and about the paranormal. And the first thing that happened was that they were all relieved. First of all, they all said, oh, yes, of course it's spiritual. Of course it's a spiritual element. And they felt this sense of relief.
Yeah, because many had never talked about it that way before.
No, and they felt embarrassed about talking to their peers about it.
Yes.
And, you know, so I think it's that was, you know, really what was interesting as well, you know, that there was this sense among, finally, that they could start to talk about this. And some of them had a language for it, and some of them didn't. Some of them were searching for words to describe these ineffable experiences. And what I'm hoping to do, you know, through the book is help to provide that language for them, to sort of give people permission to find ways to explain what they are going through. Because once you can name it, it becomes more real and more accessible, I think.
Wow. And it becomes more accessible because it has a clearer definition for the person who's experiencing
yes,
it.
Yes. Yeah. There are some experiences which just are beyond words, that are ineffable. But if we can reach towards saying, yes, this is a deep connection with the natural world. This is a deep connection with every living being. We are all part of this intricate web of life. And when I'm here on the mountain or out in the ocean, I'm really feeling this. And in terms of the spiritual tool, when I'm back in the midst of a busy city, when I'm back in Chicago, can I feel this interconnection? Can I continue to feel this? And that, for me, that's one of the lessons I've taken from talking to all these people, that you know, wherever I am, I want to try and feel that deep connection with everything in the universe that once was, I mean, it did used to be talked about before the scientific revolution rationalized everything. The ancient Greeks believed in a world soul that we were all hooked into. Aristotle talked about different levels of soul, you know, and that was linked into the cosmos, and you know, we were once all part of a greatly connected universe, and somehow that's all been lost, you know, since the 17th century, and you know, I think it's part of the whole. One of my feelings is it's part of the whole movement towards this big spiritual growth now that's happening, is maybe people are trying to get back to that connection with nature and with each other.
Well, what I thought is that the all of us are on our own exploration. These guys do it more with greater intention and more intensity.
Yes, good way of putting it.
Yeah. With greater intention and more intensity. But we are all, and I do find, you know, for even this Soul series, that so many people that we talk to on the show and so many people who listen are on that path of trying to discover, to be in the vibrational frequency of life, to be right there where everything's sort of pulsating and everything's all connected. That's our great desire.
Absolutely. And
yes.
And these people, I think, are hardwired a bit differently, that they have to go to further extremes to find it.
Are you able to find it for yourself without having to go to great I know you have an adventure company.
Yeah.
Is that how you find it for yourself?
I... I, in some ways, through the trips that we lead through hidden places, I take people to amazing parts of the world. And but not, we don't do anything dangerous, you know, with our groups.
Oh, nine's my year to have more fun. So I might call it. When I saw that you did that, I thought, well, maybe that's who I'm going to call. I'm going to go on an adventure to some amazing part of the world.
But what I like to do, what my husband and I like to do, is take people to very beautiful parts of the world, like Halong Bay in northern Vietnam, to the coast of Croatia, to the Galapagos Islands, and just bring them to those moments of total immersion in the landscape. We're often kayaking. A lot of our trips are kayaking.
You just came from the Galapagos Islands.
Yeah, right? I just came back there.
Going back tonight?
And I'm going back next week.
Okay.
And yeah, to have those moments of just connection with nature, you know, just to be quiet and to feel, you know, you're on a boat or in a kayak and you're part of the ocean. I mean, that's, for me, that's the joy of kayaking. It's a meditative exercise and just feeling that you're actually so close to the ocean, you're so close to the animals. In the Galapagos Islands, of course, it's like being in the Garden of Eden. I mean, you walk through these through islands where the animals have no fear of humans because they haven't been predated. And it's as if you're... Annie Dillard said it was like being a leaf blowing among them. So you're walking along a path. Last week, I was walking along a path.
What a fabulous line. It's like a leaf blowing among them.
Yeah.
Yes, go ahead.
And I, you know, and this happens a lot. I find myself face-to-face with an enormous waved albatross. These are enormous birds sitting on the path on its egg. So I just, at a respectful distance, squat down in front of it, and we just look at each other. And, I mean, it's for me, that's... It's so spiritual because there's this connection. It's the albatross is looking at me and I'm looking at it. And then eventually I get up.
And it's thinking, what a weird creature.
I know.
this yeah, and has no name for it.
Yeah.
Which is one of the things that I learned from A New Earth with Eckhart Tolle when he was here. And we did a 10-week course, is that naming things separates you from the connectedness to the thing when you give it a name and you give it a label. Mm-hmm. But just as you're looking at the bird and the bird's looking, the bird has no name for you. It's just, you know, interested in your beingness.
Yes. Yeah. So it's, and, you know, some of the, you know, I've done some adventures with my husband, you know, not taking groups, and we've gone on long kayaking trips. And yes, you know, I've really felt very, that those are the times when I felt very, very connected as well to the earth and to the, and during times of great duress as well, as I've said. You know, I think some of the hardest experiences of our lives are the ones that crack us open.
That
which connects us all.
Open. Well, I thank you for coming all this way to share Explorers of the Infinite and allow us to see within ourselves how we can do that. Not by going off to the Galapagos Islands, necessarily. For me, it's just sitting under the oaks.
Absolutely.
I have an entire, like, grove of oaks on my property, and being with the trees does that. And hoping that you who are listening, you find your own island within yourself. Thank you, Maria Coffey, Explorers of the Infinite.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this edition of our Soul Series. These are some of my favorite conversations.
To hear more, sign up for a free 30-day XM Radio trial by going to www.xmradio.com/Oprah.